Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, research scientists are closely monitoring the spread of avian influenza in U.S. dairy cattle. We'll hear from Dr. Rosemary Sifford, who is with the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. The avian flu outbreak in U.S. dairy cows has been having an impact on cattle markets right across North America. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch. He'll join us on the program. Determining optimal seeding rates for wheat under high and low moisture conditions was the focus of a study conducted at six AgriArm locations. We will have some of the results from that as well. And companies that haven't applied yet to Protein Industries Canada's Technology Leadership Project stream have another chance to do so. We'll hear from Megan Gervais, the Chief Technology Officer who is running the stream. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. Research scientists are closely monitoring the spread of avian influenza in U.S. dairy cattle. Over the past 2 weeks, H5N1 has been confirmed in cows from 16 herds in six states. That includes Texas, where a dairy farm employee tested positive with mild symptoms. The worker's only symptom was eye inflammation, and viral levels in their nose were low, suggesting that they did not have a respiratory infection. Health officials say the threat to people remains very low, but the situation is being closely monitored. Dr. Rosemary Sifford with the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service explains.
We have epidemiologists who are working with producers to gather up information, and we're working with our state animal health officials to get samples into the lab for testing. All of that information helps us to understand much more clearly what role high-path avian influenza is playing in this overall illness in dairy cattle and what we can do to more effectively prevent it in the future.
Dr. Sifford explains the symptoms that have appeared in U.S. dairy cattle with avian flu.
The primary symptoms in dairy cattle are loss of appetite going off feed and then a dramatic drop in milk production. And some of the cattle occasionally showed a slight fever.
The cattle have been recovering, so while the herds are being monitored, no depopulation has occurred.
So far, it appears that the cattle are able to recover after a couple of weeks, go back into the milking herd, and so at this point, we do not expect to depopulate cattle.
In 1996, the influenza strain called H5N1 was first detected in birds in China. It has been spreading in birds since 2021, killing hundreds of millions of domestic and wild birds around the world, including here in Canada. Since February of 2022, more than 82 million farmed birds have been culled due to avian flu, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The American poultry industry produces more than 9 billion chickens and turkeys each year. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
India is extending its exemption on pea import restrictions for another 2 months until the end of June. Farmers in India are in the midst of harvest, with the government estimating chickpea production at 12.2 million metric tons, about 100,000 less than a disappointing harvest 1 year ago. a senior editor and policy commentator with the Hindu Business Times, thinks that official estimate may be too high. In a recent article for the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers, he's forecasting a chickpea crop of between 10.8 and 11.3 million metric tons. Opposition to the federal price on pollution has ramped up as several premiers call for a meeting with the Prime Minister to discuss the issue. Many have opposed carbon pricing since it was implemented in 2019, but the rhetoric has been heating up due to cost of living pressures. The hike in the consumer levy earlier this month added 3.5 cents to a liter of gasoline. Farmers do have an on-farm fuel exemption, but say the carbon price affects their costs throughout the supply chain. Saskatchewan has estimated its farmers will pay $137 million this year. The price rose from $65 per metric ton to $80 on April 1st and is projected to be $170 per metric ton by 2030. Despite the exemption, farmers still pay the tax on heating fuel, electricity, natural gas and propane for grain drying, and the indirect cost from others such as transporters. Alberta's irrigation district managers are proposing a $5 billion plan for water storage and conservation in the province's south as the region faces increasingly tight supplies of the vital resource. The plan is contained in a newly released report from the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association. It says lands drained by the South Saskatchewan River will face more pressure on their water supplies as the province's population grows and climate change continues to bite. Association Director Margot Redelbach says the region will probably still have enough water in years to come, but she says it will probably come at different times of the year or will drain away as runoff instead of being released slowly by melting glaciers or snow. Her group is proposing 8 water storage projects or improvements to even out that availability, as well as new wetlands to absorb water flowing through. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 74% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 35, a notable improvement from the 60% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 34. CN saw a modest improvement in performance, while CPKC saw significant improvement as compared to the prior week. In supplying 70% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 35, CN saw performance improve from the 63% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 34. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 13th consecutive week. CPKC performance improved considerably from the prior week, with the railway supplying 79% of shipper orders in Week 35 as compared to 58% in the prior week. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the 11th consecutive week. The United States Department of Agriculture, or USDA, updated stakeholders on how a highly pathogenic avian influenza strain may have spread to dairy cattle in several states. Department officials said the virus, which started its multi-state spread sometime in late March, may be expanding its reach through milking equipment, dairy workers managing infected milk, or both. This means the virus may not be spreading via cows' respiratory systems as previously submitted. Department scientists also suggest the bird flu may not be spreading via migratory birds as previously thought. What may be behind the outbreak is spring cattle movement exacerbated by the virus targeting cow udders. Milk is the only cow fluid or tissue where researchers have found an H5N1 subtype known as clade 2.3.4.4b. China's drive to boost grain production has entered a bottleneck where it's difficult to increase production further, as Beijing launched a new drive to raise domestic output by 50 million metric tons by 2030. The world's largest grains importer reported a record corn crop last year and bumper harvests of other grains, but continues to aim for greater output amid rising tensions with some trade partners, climate-related disasters, and military conflicts. Production of crops such as soybeans, corn, wheat, and rice is being restricted by a shortage of labor, an aging farm workforce, a lack of arable land, the small scale of production units, and a lack of farming technology. Beijing has said it will focus on accelerating the use of high-yielding crop varieties and mechanization this year as it seeks to further improve food security. It has also expanded its budget to stockpile grains and edible oils and strengthened policies to encourage grain planting. SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's today's Ag Review. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will continue in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's sunny and 8 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The avian flu outbreak in U.S. dairy cows has been having an impact on cattle markets right across North America. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch.
I would think it's something that we should all keep an eye on. Who would have ever thought that avian flu would become a problem in dairy cattle in multiple states? And then you might say, well, how does dairy ever relate to the beef industry? But of course, there's a lot of dairy that you know, that's their ultimate use for cull cows is into the beef industry. So everything is related. And I think the markets have shown just a little bit of hesitancy in the U.S., wondering how this is all going to unfold. Hopefully it's nothing serious and all blows over and there's not any more shoes to drop when it comes to this. But I think it's something that really will bear watching in the weeks ahead.
He says that's why this might be a great time for cattle producers to get in on the livestock price insurance program.
And there's so many things that can happen between, you know, calves are starting to hit the ground now, depending on the farming operation, and some people calve later than this, but a lot of them market in October and November, December. And the fact that cattle prices have been so high and calf prices have been so high that you can lock in a profitable price at a premium. There's a premium cost to locking in a floor price. But if you look at things that have gone sideways before, we're old enough to remember the BSE crisis when prices crashed. Maybe this avian flu thing will take a turn for the worse. The border, people still worry about it being closed due to something like foot and mouth disease. So if I'm not a cow-calf producer, but if I was, I'd be seriously watching the premiums and the coverage levels under livestock price insurance and scratching my head over whether to enlist some coverage before the deadline in June to enact a floor price.
On another topic, Hirsch says the April 1st increase in the federal carbon tax is having a significant impact on agriculture producers.
I think there's the carbon tax influences producers in a number of ways that most of us don't even notice. Gasoline and diesel is exempt from the carbon tax for farm use. Natural gas and propane for grain drying is not. That's an obvious cost if you're drying grain. But the carbon tax also applies to rail movement of grain. And that freight cost, that's paid by the grain companies, but it's reflected back into a lower price for producers. Fertilizer manufacturing is subject to all sorts of carbon taxes that ends up in the final price of fertilizer. So there are many calculations to be done, and it's good to see APAS actually try to put some numbers to the extent of this, because the narration is that, oh, most people get more money back in rebates than they pay in carbon tax. Well, that may be true for especially low and middle income Canadians, but for businesses like farms, it's certainly not the case. We're many, many thousands of dollars behind.
He also commented on the Water Security Agency's report last week that nearly three quarters of reservoirs are at good levels except in the southwest, of course.
We were actually a little lucky, and I don't know how widespread it was, but right at Cabri, I wasn't down, but the neighbors say that maybe about half an inch of rain, which is nice to have. But of course, that isn't going to change the picture or change reservoirs. But there are some, especially irrigation reservoirs in the southern part of the province, southwestern part of the province. And if they don't fill up, that will be bad news, especially for some hay production in that area. It is interesting to note that, as I understand the report, the level of Lake Diefenbaker is actually something like a meter higher than it was at last year this time. And there's a lot of the environmental types running around saying, oh gosh, we shouldn't increase irrigation. We might not have enough water. Well, I think it's a crime not to use the water we have in Lake Diefenbaker and use it properly. Great resource should not be wasted, and it allows water to be managed in Saskatchewan. But certainly, moisture will continue to be a concern over a large part of the prairie region as we go through the weeks ahead and get closer to spring seeding.
And Hirsch then talked about the latest announcements that came out last week from Protein Industries Canada.
Protein Industries Canada typically likes to see and funds projects that involve numerous players in the value chain. And it's good to see them particularly concentrating on canola meal, because with the increase in crush capacity, especially in Saskatchewan, there's going to be a lot more canola meal available that if it can find a higher value use, that will be good for the entire industry.
Kevin Hirsch is the chief agricultural editor for SaskAgToday.com.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 173.32 today. That's up 127. August live cattle closed at 170.90, up 92. May feeder cattle closed at 237.17, down 1 full cent. August feeder cattle closed at 248.25, down 37. May lean hogs closed at 97.87, up 32. June lean hogs closed at 107.92, up 2. And that's the livestock market conditions. Determining optimal seeding rates for wheat under high and low moisture conditions was the focus of a study conducted at 6 AgriArm locations in Saskatchewan. AgriArm is a network of producer-directed applied research and demonstration organizations located across the province. The current seeding rate recommendation for wheat is 20 to 25 plants per square foot. The goal of the study was to evaluate the ideal seeding rate for spring wheat under different environmental conditions. 6 locations participated in the 2-year study, which covered 2022 and 2023. There was data for Scott and Swift Current in both years, while Prince Albert, Melfort, Yorkton, and Indian Head participated in 2023. A hailstorm eliminated data collected from Swift Current last year. The locations were placed into 2 groups: the low moisture, which had less than 70% of the long-term average, and the high moisture, which was between 70% and normal precipitation. The 2 years at Scott, along with Melfort and Indian Head in 2023, were in the low moisture grouping, with Swift Current in 2022, Prince Albert 2023, and Yorkton 2023 in the high moisture grouping. The project was led by Alex Waldner, a research associate with the Western Applied Research Corporation at Scott. At each location, there were 7 different seeding rates: 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, and 40 plants per square foot. 4 yield influencing factors were measured: tiller density, head size, head density, and head length. The 4 were consistent at all locations, with tiller density, head size, and head length decreasing with higher seed density. and head density increasing with seeding rate regardless of environmental conditions. However, yield response varied depending on location and year. Waldner starts with the seeding recommendation under low moisture conditions.
For head density, that 52 to 57 heads per square foot occurred most commonly at seeding rates between 15 to 40 seeds per square foot. But our tiller density between 1.5 to 3.5 most commonly occurred at seeding rates of 15 to 20 seeds per square foot. And since these factors are highly correlated to yield, we found that the highest yields most frequently occurred at seeding rates between 15 to 25 seeds per square foot, resulting in yields of 80 to 85 bushels per acre. So with this, we came up with a seeding rate recommendation of 20 seeds per square foot to optimize yields in low moisture conditions.
Moving into locations with higher moisture conditions,
we see again that head density and tiller density are highly correlated to yield, and that the highest yields occurred most frequently at head densities between 47 and 50 heads per square foot, resulting in 90 to 100 bushels per acre yields. And our highest yields occurred with tiller densities of 1 to 2.5 and 3 to 4 tillers per plant. We also found that unlike the low moisture conditions, the head size was significantly correlated to yield, meaning that when moisture isn't limited, the number of seeds per head does have an influence on yield. And the highest yields occurred most commonly with head sizes between 27 and 30 seeds per head.
As for seeding recommendations under high moisture conditions,
the head densities that most commonly achieved high yields occurred at seeding rates between 30 to 35 seeds per square foot. And tiller densities that were highly correlated to yield occurred at seeding rates between 25 to 30 seeds per square foot. And our yield in the high moisture group tended to increase as seeding rates increased. So the highest yields occurred at seeding rates between 35 to 40 seeds per square foot. So as a result, we came up with a seeding rate recommendation of 30 seeds per square foot to optimize yields in high moisture conditions. Seeding rates higher than this might also increase yields, but we need to also factor in the economics when we're looking at seeding rates and whether or not that increase in seeding rate is covering the cost of that added seed.
So recapping the results,
we learned that the seeding rates to optimize yields do vary based on moisture conditions, where the ideal seeding rate in low moisture conditions was at 20 seeds per square foot to maximize yield, and the ideal seeding rate in high moisture conditions was 30 seeds per square foot. Our recommendations mostly fit in with the current seeding rate recommendation, where on the lower end of the spectrum, we're optimizing yields in low moisture conditions, and then on the higher end, and even pushing up to 30 seeds per square foot, we're optimizing yields in adequate moisture conditions. Of course, none of us know what the growing season will hold for precipitation, but when this data starts to become really valuable is when we look at variable rate seeding applications, whereas our hilltops might correspond to these low moisture conditions, and then our low spots would correspond to high moisture conditions.
Alex Waldner is a research associate with the Western Applied Research Corporation at Scott. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed down across the board today. May canola closed at $638.30, down $4.80. July canola closed at $648.10, down $3.40. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.50 and a quarter. That's up 2 and a quarter cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.85 and a quarter, up 3 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.65 and three quarters, down 1.5 cents. May corn closed at $4.35 and a half. That's up 1 and a quarter cents. May soybeans closed at $11.81 and a half, down 3.5 cents. May oats closed at $3.29 and three quarters, down 1.5 cents. And that's the commodities update. Companies that haven't applied yet to Protein Industries Canada's Technology Leadership Project stream have another chance to do so. A third call for applications is being made, and Megan Gervais, the chief technology officer who is running the stream, says they're looking for projects that can produce favorable outcomes in a variety of areas.
And we're really looking across the agri-food value chain. So anything from development of germplasm with improved protein content, better processing efficiency, or quality or sensory characteristics, and then using those new crop varieties in ingredient manufacturing. So extracting, the protein, the starch, the fiber, and whatever other constituents are in that crop out into ingredients. And then, of course, looking for applications where those ingredients would be used in food products or in feed products or in, co-product or bioproduct development as well.
She expects a good turnout during the latest call for expressions of interest, or EOI.
It's been roughly 10 months since we closed the last call for projects in this stream. And sort of as soon as we close, we have people kind of back saying, so when will you open again? And are you ready for new project applications? And so we know that there are, a number of projects in the pipeline that have sort of been waiting for an opportunity to apply. So those ones will be coming in. And then we're always open to have conversations with folks we've not talked to in the past about potential project concepts as well. So we do expect to see a pretty good amount of activity coming out of this call. And, by summertime, we'll have a good sense of what projects are moving forward, and we'll see them turn into projects through the fall and get them funded, and off they'll go.
To start the application process, interested parties need to visit proteinindustriescanada.ca/technology and fill out the form at the bottom of the page. If the project meets the initial eligibility criteria, Gervais says a member of the Protein Industries Canada project team will reach out to set up a preliminary meeting.
And what we would be looking for there is just a quick conversation with folks to give them an overview of the program and the expectations of applications. Our program is driven through collaboration, and so we require that at least three companies collaborate in development of a project. So there are often conversations and questions from potential applicants about what that looks like and how that works. And so what we find is that we have an initial conversation with folks. It takes about 20 minutes or half an hour to sort of walk them through what the program looks like, and that will really set them up for success in terms of drafting an expression of interest to us. And giving you a contact within our organization as well, who can answer any questions as you work through the development of your application.
An application must include the use of high-protein dryland crops such as lentils, peas, canola, faba beans, oats, or soy. Up to $40 million is available to eligible projects, and those approved may get up to 45% of their project costs reimbursed. The deadline to apply is May 22nd. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
As you heard last week, the Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show was held in the city. That went Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And we have the results of the judging competition. In Cloverbud, first place went to Lexi Martins from the Sarath 4-H Beef Club. Second place went to Noah Bieber from the Candiac 4-H Beef Club. Junior first went to Tessa Brehot from the Wawota 4-H Beef Club. Second place went to Luke Vandenherk from the Simri 4-H Beef Club. Intermediate first place went to Quinn Keller from the Newdorf 4-H Beef Club. Second place went to Lexi Brehot from the Wawota 4-H Beef Club. In the senior competition, first place went to Abby Tomlin from the Sheho 4-H Beef Club. Second place to Morgan Sutter from the Kelvington 4-H Beef Club. As for showmanship in the Cloverbud, grand champion was Chance Eris from the Tisdale 4-H Beef Club. Reserve champion was Clara Brehot from the Wawota 4-H Beef Club. Junior, the grand champion, was Jace Bittler from the Whitewood 4-H Beef Club. The reserve champion was Presley Woitis from the Radville 4-H Beef Club. Intermediate grand champion was Kyler Osborne from the Broken Shell 4-H Multiple Club. Reserve champion was Kendra Ewan from the Kelvington 4-H Beef Club. Senior Grand Champion was Avi Brehaut from the Wawota 4-H Beef Club. Reserve Champion was Porter Wolkowski from the Good Spirit 4-H Beef Club. Overall Showmanship, the overall champion showmanship, went to Avi Brehaut from the 4-H Beef Club in Wawota. The Jackpot Heifer Grand Champion was Kiera Hauerluck from the Sheho 4-H Beef Club. Reserve Champion was Delaney Sebastian from the Candiac 4-H Beef Club. Jackpot Steer Grand Champion Ty Aris from the Tisdale 4-H Beef Club. Reserve Champion was Jace Bittler from the Whitewood 4-H Beef Club. Open Heifer Grand Champion was Ryder Bittler from the Whitewood 4-H Beef Club. Reserve Champion Abby Tomlin from the Sheho 4-H Beef Club. Open Steer Grand Champion was Delaney Sebastian from the Candiac 4-H Beef Club. Reserve Champion Tanner Hauerluck from the Sheho 4-H Beef Club. As for the group of three steers, first place went to the Wawota 4-H Beef Club, second to the Kelvington 4-H Beef Club, third to the Moose Range 4-H Beef Club, and fourth to the Simry 4-H Beef Club. Group of three heifers, first place went to Tisdale 4-H Beef Club, second place to the Newdor 4-H Beef Club, third place to the Moose Range 4-H Beef Club, and fourth place to the Kelvington 4-H Beef Club. Team Grooming, Cloverbud Junior Class Number 1, first place was Team 9. That was Wyatt Mack from the Long Laketon Multiple 4-H Club, Kenzie Aris from the Tisdale 4-H Beef Club, Scotty Seiss from the Newdor 4-H Beef Club, and Hudson Man Outram from the Madigan 4-H Beef Club. Second place was Team 19, Jayla Seiss from the Newdor 4-H Beef Club, Lily Johnston from the Foam Lake 4-H Beef Club, Chance Aris from the Tisdale 4-H Beef Club, and Gavin Benko from the Long Laketon Multiple 4-H Club. Third place went to Team 15, Chloe Cranch of the Moose Range 4-H Beef Club, Mason Weirs from the Long Laketon Multiple 4-H Club, Charles Gill from the Simry 4-H Beef Club, and Kix Usick from the Sheho 4-H Beef Club. Cloverbud Junior Class Number 2, first place was Team Number 4, Jacob McLean from the Kelvington 4-H Beef Club, Austin Brehaut from the Wawota 4-H Beef Club, Mackenzie Ward from the Springside 4-H Beef Club, and Bridget Lukey from the Good Spirit 4-H Beef Club. And that's all the time we have for the announcements today on today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now coming up on 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Partly to mainly sunny, winds east-southeast at 10 to 20 and a high of 11. For tonight, mainly clear, winds east becoming northwest at 10 to 20 and diminishing, a low of minus 2. For tomorrow, mainly sunny, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20, a high of 14, an overnight low of plus 2. For Wednesday, cloudy with a 30% chance of isolated showers, winds northwest at 15 to 30, a high of 11. For Thursday, sunny, also a high of 11, and Friday, partly sunny, a high of 12. In the Paw and Swan River, it's 11 degrees. Dauphin is at 9. Brandon, Show Lake Russell, 10. Roblin, 7. Regina is at 12 degrees. Saskatoon, 9. Hudson Bay, 13. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 11. The Yorkton, Melville region has a sunny sky. A north-northeast wind at 13 kilometers an hour. 57% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 8 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.